Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Okay, hello, welcome back to another episode. Matt and I just chatting off air about our own kind of mediocre running careers, because I hung the spikes up, 6 months ago now? And Matt's getting close, so any of you want to kind of motivate Matt to keep going, just make sure you kind of slide in his DMs and tell him to grind it out. But now, in all seriousness, we were just chatting about how it's pretty... can be pretty tough kind of at the non-elite end of the sport sometimes, like when it's supposed to be fun, but actually there's quite a lot of pressure, I feel like, to just like train hard and race hard, because otherwise you're just not running well, are you, mate?
Mate, you know what I'm struggling with the most right now, and maybe there's a few people out there that can relate, is it's just not sociable for me right now. Obviously, I coach most nights anyway. So when I'm coaching, I never want to be this person who's training and coaching in the same group. So I'm doing everything on my own at weird hours, weird times of day. I feel like there's no consistency, there's no routine. The biggest thing is it's just all solo, and I've just never been one of those people who actually responds to grinding. I think you've got to be really, really driven, and you've got to have some pretty big internal goals, external goals, and I'm just not sure I have those right now. And I think that's what I'm struggling with the most. And so I'm just thinking, like, you know, what am I doing this for? I think I'm falling out of love with it a little bit because of that. You put pressures on, I don't even know why I'm putting pressure on myself, but I'm just like, you know, trying to run respectable times in training, and it's just not coming. I've been nursing injuries on and off for the last like 3 years now as well, like stuff in my back just keeps coming back and problems there. So hey, it's just, yeah, it's a little bit of a depressing start to the episode, to be honest.
Yeah, well, one thing it's made me think about recently, you know how everyone sort of, you coaches and people in the sport sort of tell you when you're young, your peak at 28, right, your peak at 30, for example, that's when you'll have your best running, you know. And like, yeah, maybe physiologically, like you would, but I've not made it to 28, you know, 27 at the moment. Like, I've not made it to the peak of my physiological career. So actually, maybe I should have just trained a bit harder when I was younger, you know, because it was never going to get there. Like, unless you've got funding or just kind of, I guess, just a bit more time on your hands, for example. Obviously, like, look, I could go all in if I really wanted to. Like, I'm not trying to claim that it's a sob story or anything like that. But I do think that sometimes, yeah, you're like, oh well, I've got loads of time to keep running and whatnot. But I think especially like university years, for example, you get 3 to 5 years if you do a master's, for example, where you can really just crank out a load of training. And then after that, it's hard to replicate that unless you sort of make some sacrifices elsewhere, isn't it?
It is, mate. Those years, you know, without sounding one of these, you know, old people, because we're definitely not, but those years do fly by. And yeah, you kind of find yourself where we are now, and we're just like, Jesus, you know, we've got a lot going on in life. And I think that's another thing as well. Like, I just feel like my life's a bit chaotic right now. And yeah, no routine and training's all over the place. And oh God, I can't get a rhythm. And I think obviously one of the biggest things I preach when I coach is just strength in numbers. You look at, well, I fully believe that you need to be in it with people. It's very, very hard to go alone. I think there's few athletes who can go alone, and I think there's few events you can go alone in as well. And I think anything sort of 800 meters and below, I think it's doable. Anything longer than that, I really do think, you know, you're talking about getting miles in really to be any good in this sport. And it's got to be sociable, and you've got to have people there, people around you during sessions, even during runs. And look, obviously, like, we could carry on, but I think you found this as well, didn't you? I think there's a level that everyone's happy to compete at. And I feel like I'm just slipping away from that level. And I think you found this as well. Not to say that we are, you know, high caliber athletes, but I think everyone has their own personal, like, okay, as long as I'm at this level, I'm happy to still put in the work because I'm being somewhat rewarded for it.
For me, it was just slipping away from that. I just got to the point where I was like, look, realistically, I just don't think I'm going to PB again because I don't have the, maybe not the time in the day, but I don't have the time in the day in relation to the effort it takes to train as hard as I have in the past. So I'm not going to PB by training less hard than I did when I ran my PBs, for example. Mm. That was my basic look at it. And I was like, whatever that level that is for you, potentially, like if you're listening, then sometimes that is, you just don't want to do that. Because for me, I think that's always what it was. Didn't really, obviously I cared how quick I was, but I only cared how quick I was in relation to like improving every year. It didn't really matter what that was. But once that was like, actually, I don't think I can do the mileage that I was doing when I ran that personal best, for example, then I was like, well, what's the point?
So I think that's
blame Matt Edwards, if you're listening. Matt, if you're listening, I'm blaming you because you left me. My housemate last year, we used to crank out the 10 milers after work together. And then I was having to do them on my own. So I was like, yeah, it's actually his fault. So
genuinely, like, I think with coaching as well, we've both got a very good understanding of actually what it takes to be good in this sport. And I think in the back of my mind, I know that I'm never going to hit that sort of training, those sort of workouts to get to that level. Cause I just think, you know, my lifestyle is just not conducive to it right now. Also, I think, you know, when I really deep it, I'm not mentally cut out for it either. Like, I'm not sure that's actually what I want to be doing with my life. So then I just know, I'm just like, well, really, what's the point? Shall I just do parkrun every Saturday morning and have some fun with this thing? And I think you said as well to me, like, it is supposed to be fun. And I feel like once you take yourself out of those fun environments, going down to the club, and this is a message to anyone listening, is I think you need to stay involved with a club or a group as long as possible. And look, the training might not be exactly what you want in that group, but I think the social aspect of it is far outweighs the kind of benefits you might get from tweaking a session and doing it on your own and following a slightly different training method. Because I just think in the end, that solo grind will catch up with you.
There you go. Well, yeah. That's our start
to be continued. I think to be continued. Maybe I just need a few weeks to just tick along, but the thought of training right now is just not appealing to me. But I think I'm just going for it.
Well, I was just trying to get everyone to start rallying you, mate. So getting Ced's DMs. maybe I'll start training for a beer mile, you know. So
we need some external goals. Like, we were just joking off air, like, maybe we'll be those morons who let their Garmin coach them and just do these stupid like challenges, just eat meat for 30 days, basically become Nick Simmons.
minus the athletic caliber. But yeah, anyway, let's get in some races, mate, because talking of your hectic schedule, I'm sure everyone saw your excellent commentary down at Podium on the weekend. It looked like a pretty hectic day, mate. So should we start there? Because I know we obviously look, no, it's no secret that we're supported by Sports Shoes, and we kind of have some links with them. But what a race! Well, I say a race, what an event to put on, and I definitely think it lived up to the hype.
Yeah, mate, let's definitely break it down. Look, big takeaways, big international fields. I thought fantastic racing, crowds as well. Look, the venue is a massive one that I think not enough people appreciate. You know, road races, typically you can't see the whole thing. You see snippets of it. People, you know, fly by you. On that, it's like being on the infield of a track, to be honest. It's lane three beer and cheer all over again. So the atmosphere was electric. It started pissing down just before the elite races, which was a real shame, because all throughout the afternoon, I'm scratching my head, beginning to wonder if the track's short, because people are running. I'm on the commentary. I've got their PBs on paper. They're, you know, people who've never broken 15 minutes before are running 14:30. I'm like, that's a massive, you know, jump to make. Girls who've never broken 17 before running 16:40. Girls who've never hardly broken 16 running 15:30. It was just crazy. There were some really big times going down. And even to the point where, so you got Elite Men's A, Elite Men's B, and then you had like the last open race, which is sub 15 minutes. It was one in 14:18. It was ridiculous. And so I was really getting excited and giddy for those A races. And unfortunately, the weather turned, started peeing down. The breeze didn't really pick up, but just a wet, cold, dark track. And it got dark, which I don't think actually the floodlights were amazing. It kind of made for the atmosphere and made for the event. It was a nice touch, but I think it did need to be a little bit brighter. I mean, these people are, you know, running, what, close to 240Ks up at the front end. Mm. So there was that. But incredible event. And I think both elite races were exciting as well. And there were some great domestic battles going on. I think standout performances. I like the way Will Barnico got after it. I think he was really, really aggressive. And actually, when you go on the lap splits, look, full disclaimer, it's just under a K. It was 976 meters, not a K. But I think Barnico, well, Gebruyt and co. threw in a sort of 230 just outside. Second lap? And Barnico pretty much hung on them the whole way. And I think that obviously cost him the race. But I think great training for him for World Cross. I think he probably needed it. So there was some nice takeaway. Nick Griggs was the best of the kind of domestic, well, I say Europeans, in fourth. But do you want to go through some more results, mate?
Yeah, that Nick Griggs, obviously 13:39. I think that was the one that caught my eye because he's someone that obviously best event is the mile probably, or the 1500 if you like. But he's someone that definitely every time you see him, like you see him a bit on the cross, you see him in a 3K, and you think, oh, maybe this guy's future really is in a 5K. And I think that clock in on the road, like the guy's still in under 20 as well. Like, I think it's so easy to forget because he seems like he's been around for years now. The Nick Griggs still in under 20. I thought fantastic run again, like you say, Barnico just behind in 13:43. Super impressive run, like going off like that. And as you say, if you're going to compete at a World Cross, you need to be able to go with it at the start. He can't go to the World Cross and sit off and try and pick people off because they're not coming back to you. So I think he mentioned to us when he came on the pod earlier in the year that's what he was going to do, and was getting to get some fast road races in to get his leg speed going so that he was ready for World Cross. And what I like about this young guy is that he's actually targeting the World Cross. He's not just saying, oh, I'm just going to do it because I'm in the team or do it for the experience. He's targeting the World Cross to have a good run, and he's making sure he preps properly for it.
100%. I think when you break it down as well, you've got James West, who ran 13:19 at Boston. A few weeks later, James West runs 13:44. Barnico beats him 13:43. And Barnico was, you know, by like, that was a, if you're looking for an optimum 5K, he's executed pretty poorly, to be honest with you. He got trapped in no man's land. He's gone off hard, etc. But I think that was always going to be his game plan. So I think it shows you the caliber he's actually at. I don't think he'll get enough credit for that run on the weekend. So hopefully, yeah, we've got a bit of a World Cross preview coming up. So obviously next weekend now. So hopefully he's in good nick and can bounce off of that. But on Westy, 13:44. Jay Wyman, 13:52. Solid. Pretty solid from him, to be honest. My big bro, 13:55. Again, so not bad from them too, because I know they've had like a little sort of after indoor season break. So they're just kind of building back up. And but mate, Ben Patterson, 14:05. We got to shout him out. I mean, yeah, that's some range. It's you know,
I think even for all three of those guys you mentioned, like your bro Zach, Jake, and Ben Patterson. Like obviously for Zach, you'd think like the steepler, he's like the most endurance base, and obviously Jake Wyman's got a good 3K. But I think all three of those guys are quite speed based athletes, you know. So it's obviously the most for Patterson, but I think it's really promising runs at this time of year for Zach and Jake as well, to be able to kind of put that 5K out. And like you said, the conditions aren't perfect. To be within, what, 10 seconds of Westy after his run at Boston the other day, you're like, okay, now that puts in a bit of perspective. And I think if you look at their kind of usual conversions from a 5K or a 3K down to like a chase or a 15, like they increase quite a lot. So the strength's there. That's all they need. They don't need to be running 13:30 on the road, you know. So it's promising.
Exactly that. I think when you look at who they're around, it kind of gives you an idea of the conditions are probably worth 10 seconds. So all of those Brits are running a good bit quicker, which I think would have been fantastic to see. On the women's side, though, Abby Donnelly stand out after that in the county's performance. She's getting her legs spinning pre-World Cross. Obviously, she's going to need to. But like, yeah, 15-18. And again, she was aggressive and she was actually trapped on her own. She was doing a lot of the work for large periods of the race. And I think she's, look, come the summer, she gets in a good 5K. She's definitely a sub 15-minute 5K runner. I think there's no question. Mm. She's put a good chunk on Courtney Bryant, Rebecca Yottington, you know, Kate Exford and people like that. And they're low 15-minute runners and under 15-minute runners. So I think we can expect to see something quite special from Donnelly in the summer and at World Cross.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it does show you, like, cross country is a legitimate stepping stone to world class performances on the track and I think it's only a matter of time for someone like Donnelly. Like, she keeps getting these cross country wins. It's only a matter of time until she translates that into a really quick 5K on the track, for example. Like, obviously, I'm sure we'll get into it later on, but Megan Keefe last year, I know she's younger, but Megan Keefe last year obviously was way outside 15 minutes until she got that Diamond League spot. And now look at her. So I think, yeah, the jumps can happen. Like, it just takes a few opportunities, bit of consistency. So,
and look, yeah. one aspect of the podium festival, which I absolutely loved, was the time trial. I thought it was chaotic. Mm. It was fast paced. It was quick. There was something always going on. And it lasted, about 30 minutes or so. I think there was about 27 runners and someone going every single minute. I think it was just getting faster and faster and faster. I think you're constantly clock watching. You honestly, obviously it sounds a bit stupid, but I couldn't take my eyes off of it. Just because
you didn't have a choice, mate. You
can't. Didn't have a choice. Yeah, exactly. But it was just, I think we need to see more of it is what I'm trying to say here. And I think we can see different formats. And look, people will be anal about it and say, oh, it wasn't a K and it was advertised a K. Look, that was irrelevant. That didn't matter. It was one lap of that circuit. And I think even to the point where, you know, people are anxiously waiting to see what time's coming in. I just thought that format, really, really good. And it doesn't exist in the sport right now. And I think it should. And it was a perfect place for 800 runners. And it was a bit of a melting pot for sort of those 8:15 guys as well.
Yeah, 100%. Aaron Wallace, obviously 2:34 is what? So you say it was 9.97, Matt?
No, 9.76. So that 9.76,
okay.
But what is that, about 4 seconds probably?
Yeah, 2:34 is still electric on there. For Aaron Wallace and then James Young on the men's side, 2:20. Interestingly, obviously coached by Steve Cram. Maybe some people don't know about that, which is quite an interesting pairing, because you potentially, nothing against James Young, of course, but you potentially think Cram is looking for kind of your super high caliber athletes, you know. So interesting that he's working with people kind of more towards that, I guess.
Look, do you remember
the sport, you know?
Yeah, we spoke to Waitman. Was it last season? Maybe last season now. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was a little while ago. And Laura Waitman said,
it was the end of last season, yeah.
Yeah, she got coached by Cram because she sent Cram an email when she was like 14, 15 or 16 even. And, you know, Cram just worked with her. And she said the amount of people who had never asked, you know, Cram had never been asked for someone to coach him. She was one of the very first. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if James Young, I mean, Alex Bottrell is obviously working with Cram and Cram's doing a great job there. And, you know, yeah, these guys might not be top of the pile right now, but I think they're definitely going to get there under Cram's guidance, depending on what their lifestyle's saying and how much they can commit to the sport and stuff like that. But he's certainly looking good. I mean, 2:20, yeah, maybe that's worth the 2:24 on the road and sort of on a vaguely, you know, not ham flat track and with a few turns and stuff in there. He's in good nick, so I'm excited to see what. And again, if he's training with Botterill and that group and people like that, I think he's going to run well this summer. And Jesus, chuck another. Could be running another. Could have another 3:35, 3:34 guy amongst the Brits.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously it was dubbed as the Battle of the Brands as well. And great to see loads of different kind of shoe companies represented in there. So I don't know is there any stats on which shoes were coming out on top, or are we not allowed to say that?
Oh, yeah, we're definitely not allowed to say that, mate. It was just great to have them all in one place. it really was. They were no, but there was, I think it was very interactive for those as well. And look, there were down periods throughout the afternoon. And look, I knew people who had rocked up and they were literally in race two. And they stayed the whole day, no matter of the weather, no matter, it was kind of a bitter breeze, you know, blowing through as well. And they hung out all day and they got food, they got pizza, they got beers, they went and tried on shoes and took them for a little spin and stuff like that. And, you know, tried to win prizes and everything. And there was just a lot to do. And I think, again, it's just an example of how events should be run. And we've always said, for the sport really to grow, I think it does need to break up a little bit into having like events like that being the pinnacle of the distance running world. You know, whether that be at a world level or what, but, you know, obviously Highgate's a massive weekend as well. And just having these weekends throughout the year, which are just mega.
That's it. I just think the names that Barnsley managed to put together for the first one of these, I know obviously Podium's got a history, it's got a caliber, but for the first Podium Festival, I think the names he managed to assemble for that kind of first event of this kind is just insane in the first year.
Yeah, so, look, prize money is mega. Prize money is real big. You know, James Young, Aaron Wallace, they're taking home £2,000. Like, that's serious cash. And even second place was taking over £1,000. And by the way, in that time trial, three men tied on 222, which is torture. You know, someone's walked away with 1,000. I think the next person was 500, next person was 300. So, or something like that. So, you know, to be tied and be, you know, £700 difference in prize money is hard one to take. But but you're right. You know, the names he's managed to get over here. And I think that's going to grow it. It's a World Athletics licensed event. And now they've got fast times to boast about on that track, like 13:19 and 14:58 or 59 in the women's race. And I think that's only going to attract kind of more internationals. That being said, I think it would have been really good just to have a domestic battle. But look, I think domestic Brits shoot themselves in the foot because they'll moan about potentially internationals coming over. But at the same time, the fact that Gebrewet was there, it takes the pressure off a lot of Brits because they go, brilliant, the race is already going to be fast. I'm not going to have to lead. I can just follow and, you know, get dragged along. And I think you take a few of those big names out like Gebrewet and these other Kenyans, a few of the Brits, maybe someone like Nick Griggs. I know he's not a Brit, but maybe he turns around and he goes, I'll go, like, why would I want to run off the front in that 5K? I'll go do a 5K. I can get dragged around in and there's a little bit more competition around that 13:30, 13:20 mark. So, double-edged sword, because then you start to take out people like Nick Griggs and then it's just another 5K at the office.
Yeah. And the thing is, look, Jake Wyman's a world champion. Like, you don't want to go and race and not be racing the best. So I do think they'll also relish the opportunity to race against some of these top athletes. So you know, I think having Gebrewet there was brilliant, to be honest. Another race then that we have to talk about, the 10 over in California. We build it as a going to be a good one. We're pretty much there, not quite kind of the GB predictions that we potentially thought, but maybe that was a big ask. But phenomenal runs from Paddy Deaver and Megan Keefe, 27:08 for Paddy Deaver, Megan Keefe 30:36. Both of them ticking off that Olympic standard, which is no joke, by the way. And we'll have to get into those new standards that got announced today as well later on, Matt, as well. Fantastic runs. Charles Hicks 27:33, Jack Rowe 27:54. Unfortunately, Jess Judd DNF'd as well. So hoping she's okay because I think she sort of collapsed on the track. As well, so we're obviously hoping she's okay and that she can bounce back from that, because as we know, we spoke to her early in the year after Valencia, she's in pretty good nick, so I'm kind of all the best to her. But yeah, let's get into Megan Keefe's run, mate, because I think she's someone that's just been phenomenal every time she steps on the track, the grass, the road, for example. But now you're the real deal when you're running Olympic time, aren't you?
Yeah, so Megan nailed the Olympic time. That was 30:40 for the women. She ran 30:36. I thought the Olympic time for the men, I get mixed up between the Olympic and the world time as well, was 27:10, but I believe it's 27 flat. So Deva, 27:08, got the world standard, but missed the Olympic standard, I believe. But
right?
I think, no, so and then I think British Athletics' standard is 27:10, like the steeple's a little bit slower. So I think Deva... is inside, but on the results and stuff, it only said world standard. So yeah, a little bit confusing. But yeah, Keith ran exceptionally well. And I think, look, it's early days, it's March, but she beat some big talent as well. Big names. Carissa Schweitzer making a comeback, ran 31 low. And that's who Jess Jubb was running with for a bit of the race towards the end as well, before she collapsed. So yeah, I'm not sure if, yeah, I wonder what's up with Judd, to be fair. I do hope she's okay and she can bounce back from that. And I mean, she has been known just to push herself to extreme discomforts.
A heat check on that day as well, because obviously over there, I'm not sure what the weather was, but like over 10k on the track is grim when it gets hot. So I can imagine the humidity and stuff like that. So yeah, hopefully it was just that and nothing more sinister, you know. So yeah, I think you might be right actually about that Paddy Diva stat. But I believe he's fine. Like he'll be going, provided obviously he comes top two at the trials, or probably doesn't even need to do it, because I think we were talking before if Hicks and Rowe, for example, ran that time too. But I don't think they'll have another crack now, bar Highgate potentially.
Yeah, mate, that's probably the one to talk about actually is not so much Rowe, because he's already got the 5K. And I'm not sure he will have a crack at Highgate. I think he's just going to prepare now. We don't know. I haven't spoke to him, but I think it makes sense for him to prepare for the track season to nail it. Whereas Hicks, I think we're going to see Hicks at Highgate, baby, which is going to be awesome. Hicks v Charlie Wheeler at Highgate. Pick your man now. But yeah, and you know, someone else we might see at Highgate, Sam Atkin. Because he pulled out last minute.
Yeah, that was a surprise, to be honest. I saw that and I was like, what?
Oh, boy.
But yeah, Paddy Diva, phenomenal shape. We're going to have to get him back on a podcast. Go back and listen to our original one with Paddy if you're interested and you haven't already. But definitely someone we'll look to get back on, because he's kind of kicked on leaps and bounds again. Like had obviously kind of that phenomenal last year where he won NCAAs. In college, was great off it. What was that, the Oregon World Champs that year that he went to, and then yeah, he's been quiet for a couple of years, but obviously paying off for him now. That's set up over in the States with Puma, so yeah, definitely one we'll get back on.
Absolutely. So good run from him and that whole Puma group that those boys are training. I think it was a sweaty workout with them, Alistair Craggs group and what do they call themselves again? Is there a name for them? I swear there's a name for them, but maybe just Puma Elite.
Puma Elite running, probably.
That's
classic.
Honestly, my mind's gone blank. I thought there was a name for them, but I think it might just be, yeah, Puma. But cool group based out of North Carolina. And yeah, I think Pat Tiernan as well, someone that Brett Robinson mentioned last week in the marathon, running very well. And from what we've heard and people I've spoke to, Alistair Craig, his similarities to, well, he learned a lot from Jerry Schumacher. So they train the overall training is very similar. And I think Roe alluded to that a little bit. He doesn't like to tell too many people about the training. But I think the way they do speed, the way they do their kind of tempo, longer workouts, and the way they do their just kind of mileage throughout the week is very similar to what Jerry and the Bowman guys do. So that's quite interesting. And clearly now, after a couple of years, he's starting to get success. And on that, I think, do you remember when like Mark told us as well a few years ago, he was like, everyone takes 2 years to really run well under Jerry. And I think Hicks is going through a bit of a transition under Jerry. I think Hicks will be mega next year. This year, he's still got the summer, to be fair. Jesus, we're writing him off.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I think this is the thing. We get so carried away with some of these good performances that we're like, oh, yeah, it's going to take some time. The guy has just run 27:33 in March. Like,
yes, yep.
So it's not kind of all doom and gloom, is it?
Not at all. Let's quickly review World Cross. Preview World Cross. It starts 10 o'clock UK time, 11 o'clock local time, Saturday, 30th of March, so next weekend. And pretty much you've just standard women's under 20 races, first race off, and then there's pretty much a race every half hour. Mixed relay goes just before the senior races, and then senior women at 11:45 our time, UK time, senior men at 12:30. And look, I haven't double-checked, but pretty 99% sure this is on the BBC. So if it's not live, it will be on the website or BBC iPlayer. So enjoy. And look, lead entries, Lummit, is we are pretty much 10 days out from the World Cross, and I can't find the entries, the full listed entries. I'm only going on different articles where different governing bodies have published their teams, and we've seen who's running, and obviously the British team's been announced. But I'm not going to go through every bloody governing body's website to try and find who's running. And the entries aren't on the World Cross website as of yet. I'm sure they will be in the next few days. But this is where our sport's crap. This is where it lets us down time and time again. You've got the World Cross Country Championships, the biggest event in cross country, and we don't know who the hell is doing it. And we're just over a week out.
Yeah, this is why we need the Michael Johnson Track League, because then everything will be solved, or a Netflix series, because then we just know. So that would help. But it's bonkers, isn't it, mate? Like, how is it not? Like, they're previewing like Jakob v Josh Kerr already in the summer, but
yeah that's amazing.
No World Cross start list. Like, come on. We're expecting to see some of the big boys, though, aren't we? So I don't think we'll be kind of starved of talent. But it would be nice to see the full list, wouldn't it?
It would. So we can tell you what I know already. And I think by the time people are listening to this podcast, the start list will probably be published, and they'll be like, what the fuck are these two on about? Start list will be up for days. But yeah. But look, Cheptegei, Kiplimo and Aragari, three of the biggest names in distance running, are all doing it. Confirmed. Cheptegei won in 2019, third last year. Kiplimo, second in 2019, wins last year. Aragari was second last year. That was his World Cross debut. And I don't know what the average 5K time between those guys is, but it's probably 12:39 or something ridiculous. If you count Cheptegei, what, 12:35 or something? Then you got Kiplimo and Aragari, 12:40, 12:41. So, and then their 10K as well, filthy. So top three in the men's race is electric. And so we can look forward to that matchup. On the women's side, again, haven't seen too many big names, but Agnes Ngetic, the women's 10K world record holder, the one who ran 28:46 in Valencia, she's doing it, and she was third last year. So yeah, we're probably looking at her to go and take the win. And look, Ethiopia may have their power force as well. That team may have been published already, the Ethiopian women's team. I haven't sieved the web deep enough to go find it. So apologies. But Lum, one thing I wanted to talk about was prize money, because if you're on the British team, if we were actually sending a solid mixed relay team here, right? We are sending a solid mixed relay team. But I mean, if we were taking some of our biggest names, there's prize money for the mixed relay, and that it down to fourth as well. £4,000 per team for fourth, £6,000 for third, £8,000 for second, and £12,000 for first. And I'm like, hey, I mean, we could, you know, Britain could go win that, I'm pretty sure. And then the team medals as well. There's team medals up for grabs. If you're the sixth team, $4,000. So again, if Britain, especially on a women's side, Jess Judd, Abby Donnelly, they might get some good prize money at World Cross, because, I mean, the top team gets 20,000, second is 16, third is 12. So look, Jess Judd and Abby Donnelly, they go do a job, and maybe Lauren McNeil or someone like that runs well as well, because I think it's three to score. Whew. Could walk away with sort of £4,000 each if they sneak a bronze, or even, you know, 2,000 if they get fourth. Decent prize money. Well, I say decent prize money, but good, doable prize money, achievable prize money.
Yeah, for sure. You'd like to think that, look, it's very hard to challenge the medals in these World Cross events, but you'd like to think we're shooting for like a top five, top six.
For sure.
Some of the teams, you know. So, Yeah, obviously, one person you will be able to watch as well, and as you'll have seen from the name of this podcast, will be Callum Johnson, who we're going to hand over to in just a moment, because he's going on form, very on form, cross country guy at the moment. So, yeah, looking forward to see what he can do, like just dominating the UK scene recently, hasn't he been?
He has, and maybe it's a great guest to get on. You know, me struggling with motivation at the start of the episode. Callum Johnson works full time. I think he works in finance. And he's someone who just picks out, I see him as someone who picks out these key races like the World Cross. Clearly has been his goal all year. Well, might not have been, but I think it has been. And he goes and he dominates and he books his ticket. And he's kind of done that a few, when he won the National Cross for the first time, definitely struck me as someone who just really dialed in for that one race to hit the jackpot on that one weekend, on that one day. So I'll be interested to see what his approach to training and racing is, and also to his views and opinions on cross country, because I think it's an area that we don't discuss enough, how to be a good cross country runner. I think, look, tracks, so we focus on tracks so much, rightly so, but how do you become a very, very good cross country runner? Because there are opportunities. And I think Callum Johnson is someone who has dominated that and taken those opportunities. And so be excited to hear more. So let's get stuck into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get Callum on the call. And away we go. Look, thanks for listening to us ramble on and enjoy the episode with Callum. Okay, first off, Callum, just welcome to the podcast. You're kind of fresh off that Intercounties win, two-time British champion on the mud now. So preparing for World XC, how's it all going?
Yeah, no, good, thanks. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to join you guys. But yeah, all good, I think. Yeah, it was nice to come off the back of that Intercounties win, and that's the second one as well, which is always pretty sweet. I don't think it was very muddy, sadly, but I managed to pull off something, a win on the dry, and it was short as well. It wasn't even 10K, so the longer the better for me. So to do that there felt pretty sweet. And obviously it being World Trial and getting that automatic to World Cross, you know, I made it even better. So yeah, obviously really happy. Can't complain. And you can never take these wins and sort of times for granted, and you have to try and appreciate them, because you just don't know if they're ever going to come around again. So it was pretty good. I enjoyed the moment, and yeah, I sort of had my head down since and focusing on that World Cross and then in beyond as well. So pretty good,
mate. Was Intercounties always the aim? Was World Cross always the aim this season? You've had a good winter, and obviously we're expecting to see you at Nationals without, you know, but obviously that got cancelled. But yeah, had you been preparing, and how had you prepared any differently for the Intercounties and kind of with the World Cross in mind, given that, look, it's likely it's going to be fast. It's flat as well on that course profile, it looks like. So had you prepared differently?
To be honest, not really. You know, the World Cross was never really on the radar early on in the winter, when we're talking back in like September, October, when I sat down with Alan and we had a chat about what my aims were. European Cross was very much like the top of the list, because it's something I've been trying to qualify for years. So that was very much top of the list. But I think the main aim was just to actually have a cross-country season. Can't remember the last time, possibly even when I was a junior, that I'd had a full winter of just purely cross country. And I think, you know, that's partly because I was a triathlete for a long time. And it was difficult to try and balance the two. But I think, yeah, the main target was just to get through the winter, you know, race regular cross country. And then whatever came of it was a bonus. We always had in mind European Cross, and that wasn't a target because it was something I wanted to achieve. In terms of the World Cross, it was never really an A target. It was always like, well, if it happens, it's a bonus. And, you know, there was a bit of uncertainty around World Cross and as to whether it would actually, like, go ahead. Initially it was meant to be in February and it was meant to be in Croatia. And then once that got postponed, it was like, well, what now, what if? Because, you know, I had actually planned to do Berlin Half Marathon early April. So we weren't sure if it was even going to fit in. And then when it got announced and it was end of March and inter counties would be the trial, the plan was to always race inter counties, whether it was World Cross trial or not. And it just happened to be what it was. I hadn't changed any training because, like I said, it wasn't really an A target. It was Berlin half marathons is the main goal of sort of the early spring, end of winter. So training's been focused around that more than anything. So yeah, when I found out in the counties was possibly going to be our AK, I was a bit like, oh, I've been training for a half marathon, and obviously world and national cross being like 12:13. So yeah, so I'm just sort of like, it might sound a bit awful, but you know, qualifying for World Cross was just a bonus. And yeah, obviously for it to happen is awesome. Because yeah, I have to be realistic in that, like, World Cross is a different level, and you know, for me, it's going to be a learning experience, and it's going to be different. I'm going to be racing it very differently than, say, maybe other races that I've done. But it'll just be really nice to be there, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Lots to unpack in there. But one thing that stuck out for me, obviously, you mentioned that Eurocross. Was that kind of, did you see that as a real breakthrough performance for you? Like, obviously, you go into the Worlds now, but a Eurocross team is probably one that's notoriously hard to make.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely feel like it was. I feel like it's been a long time coming. I just missed out as a junior. I think I was seventh. And then I just didn't do it for years because of triathlon commitments. And then eventually when I did do it again 2 years ago and I just missed out again, I think Jake Smith got the place ahead of me by about 5 seconds. I'd never really got Liverpool right, and I was always dependent on what the conditions would be like. And I think this year, I just sort of mentally got the race right, because it's a bizarre race and it's a crazy race, and you know, it's a high quality race. It's probably the biggest domestic cross country in the winter calendar, if I'm honest, more competitive than nationals in the counties. And yeah, I just got it right this year. Whether it was a breakthrough, I don't know, but well, you could definitely say that. In my eyes, like, I should have made that team a long time ago, but I just never got around to doing it. But yeah, so it felt like, yeah, it did feel like a bit of a breakthrough in that sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a great run, and you backed it up with a good run in Brussels as well on some very, very heavy, muddy conditions. So I'm sure you enjoyed that. But just quickly, I wanted to ask you, talk about Berlin half. Are you going to still do that? What weekend is that?
Yeah, so that is the weekend after World Cross, so 7th of April,
okay.
If I'm right.
Yep.
So that still is the plan. I'll try and go there. And yeah, we've had to adjust things the last couple of weeks because, yeah, I would have been sort of heavy in a half marathon week right now, but we're just backing things off a little bit because you have to respect World Cross, and I can't be going into World Cross in heavy training because, you know, you've got to just, you know, appreciate the fact that it's a different level, and, you know, I need to go there and not as fresh as a daisy, but definitely not tired and not in sort of hard training. So we'll have a couple of easy weeks, and then what happens in Berlin. But yeah.
Okay. Well, you are, I mean, me and Ollie were talking a little bit as well. I feel like you're one of the most underrated men in the game right now. Just especially when it comes to the cross country, you're naturally very, very good at it. We wanted to know if you train for it. I mean, by the sounds of it, you're just good at it and you don't actually train for it too much. Like you said, you've got other focuses, whether it be half marathons and stuff like that. So does it just come naturally? And if so, why?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And, you know, I really appreciate, that's really kind of you to say, like, you know, like, I'm one of the most underrated, because at times I do feel that way as well. Like, I don't feel like I get the recognition I deserve sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that my whole career has been a bit like that, even in triathlon. But yeah, like, do I train for it? Yes and no. You know, I do train on the grass, definitely. And I do train on the mud. But that's not out of like, oh, I'm going to do that to prepare for a cross country. I do it because I love it. And I think that's the thing. Like, I love cross country running, and I always have since I started running at like 16, 17, properly anyway. And, you know, getting on the grass, albeit whether that's on a Saturday morning or a Thursday evening in the summer or whatever, like, I actually enjoy that. Like, it makes me enjoy training. And I almost get excited for it. And I think, like, that's key for me. Like, if I spend too much time on the track or looking at a watch, I just get, you know, a little bit distracted and forget why I'm actually doing it and why I enjoy it. And getting on the grass, say, on a Saturday morning in the winter when it is muddy and it's horrendous and it's windy and whatever, like, just, you know, I get quite a lot of enjoyment from that. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that's helped me perform in cross-country races for sure. But I think maybe, yeah, I think naturally I'm probably better at it than I am on the road or the track. And that's probably to do with, like, the way I run. It might be the triathlon background too, like that, having that strength base. Because, you know, I'll be honest, like, I'm not the most dynamic of runners. You know, I don't look like a track runner. I don't look like a Steve Ovett when I'm running. Like, you know, I have sort of very little knee lift. I am very efficient, which I think, you know, will help when it comes to the marathon in years to come. But yeah, like, I think sort of my style does favour the cross country. There's very little wasted energy, which is why I think I move quite well across that kind of surface, especially when it's muddy and especially when it is rolling and hilly. But yeah, I'm excited for sort of years to come, and I hope that European Cross can be staged on courses like Brussels again, because I think, like, you know, that was a good taster, and you know, first one, I probably was a little bit overwhelmed by the situation, because the aim was to just get there. But I'd like to think in years to come I could maybe get a bit higher up the field, but I think that'll be dependent on courses and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think, like, cross-country success is always a kind of, it's a catalyst, isn't it, for performances on the track and the road as well. And even if it's coming kind of later in your career than you expect, I still do think there is that pathway.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like, my approach to training, I'll say my approach, you know, when I do chat with Alan, my coach, like, everything is quite old school and it's quite traditional, and I get a lot of, you know, enjoyment from that. I train a lot without a watch, you know, a lot to feel. There's not a lot of, like, yeah, there's a lot of thought goes into my training, but I don't spend a lot of time in labs or anything like that. Don't get me wrong, I'd love to get on training camps a lot more into altitude, but that's just the way life is, and it's difficult to do that. But yeah, I'd like to, you know, I'm actually going to have a go on the track. I say a go on the track. I'm not going to have a full track season, but I'm going to do a bit of track racing this year, and because I know that is my weakness. And if I am going to target the marathon in years to come, I want, you know, I need to have that leg speed, and I need to get my sort of 5K, 10K times down. So I'm not going to just shy away from that because I'm not as good at it as I am on the cross country. But I like to think, you know, the strength background of the cross country and the triathlon that I did in the past, and then with a bit more specific, faster work on the track and on the road, I'd like to think that would pay off in years to come, on the road.
Yeah, we'll get to the roads in a little bit. I just wanted to clarify who your coach is, then, Callum. Alan?
Yeah, Alan Story. You probably heard of him.
Oh, we have indeed. I didn't realise. How long have you been working together?
We've been, I'm going to say, like, a couple of years at least now. Yeah, like about 2.5 years now.
Fantastic. How does that relationship work then? Because that's obviously over a distance, isn't it?
Yeah, so Alan lives down south, and I'm obviously up in the northeast. And it's great because Alan spent a lot of time up here when he was coaching back in the 80s, and he was coaching Mike McLeod and in the group up here. But it works quite well because, you know, like, I'm 30 this year and I've got a lot of experience myself. And, you know, one thing I've gotten good at over the last 5 years is listening to my own body and knowing what works and what doesn't, and when to sort of back off if I need to. And And I think that's good because, like, Alan's not the type of coach who'll be like, just do this, do that, do this. It's very much like, I'll suggest this. He'll suggest something and I'll go, we'll have a chat about it. And then if I disagree, then I'll be honest and say that, like, maybe we can back that off or change that and change the location or reduce whatever. And it works very much two ways. And that's what I really like about it. And I like that Alan is, you know, straight to the point. And he's very honest, and I'm honest as well. And I think that's the key thing, is like, there's no shying away. Like, if I cut a session short because I'm just feeling absolutely terrible, I'll just say, look, like, I've cut the session short, I've gone to bed, and that's that. I won't go away. I won't go to him and say, oh yeah, I just couldn't hit times today, I was feeling a bit off, or I'll say, yeah, the session was fine, and even though it wasn't, like, there has to be that element of trust. But it's worked really well, and it came about really weird, which we can talk about. It's actually a funny story. But when I was looking for a coach at the time anyway, because I was self-coached and I was transitioning from triathlon to running, and I wanted to have a go at the marathon, and I thought, I've got no idea what I'm getting into here and I need some guidance. And I think Alan's been sort of really pivotal and key for that. And I know he will be in years to come, because I do see this as like a long-term relationship. And although, like I said, I am nearly 30, I feel like this is just the start of my own like athletic career, because I am quite late to athletics and running because of that triathlon background. But yeah, I feel like Alan's the right guy. We get on really well. We have a laugh. It's a very relaxed relationship. And yeah, it's a very two-way coaching relationship. I'd obviously like to see him a lot more, but we chat on the phone regularly, and it just seems to work.
Mm. You said that it's old school, you don't use a watch that much. How did he kind of keep a tab on you then?
Obviously, when I say I don't use a watch that much, I don't wear a watch on like easy runs and stuff like that. Mm. And don't record them. But I do wear it in training, like sessions. And unless it's on the grass, of course, then I just use it because we run to time and not to like pace or distance. So say on the track, running a session, 6 by a mile or whatever it may be. Yeah, I report them times back, sort of report how I feel. And I guess he'll probably track that over time. And then we'll start to adjust things. If I am getting a bit fitter, then the target times may change. But then also, like, it's not always about time, and it's not always about like, I need you to hit this time. It's like, I need you to run at this sort of effort level and this sort of like heart rate range, because like I do have a heart rate monitor as well, and we can sometimes track that. But a lot of it is to feel, and I think that's just like a product of like the last, well, 10 years of training as an elite athlete, albeit in triathlon, is that I do know what a certain session should be. I know how that should feel like. That might change a little bit when it comes to the track or training for something a bit more specific, but for the stuff we've been doing, that works quite well. And I don't have access to sports science and a lot of the sort of things that other people do, what other elite athletes do. So to me, like, yeah, I could get in a lab, but it's pointless getting in a lab once a month, once a year sort of thing. It needs to be a regular thing. And I can't do that. And then also working full time as well, like, you have to take that into account, in that some days just, yeah, there's only so much you can like plan. Because there has to be a bit of flexibility in the schedule for the days that I just don't feel right, I guess, or don't feel ready to train hard.
Yeah, and how did you first get in touch with Alan then, like when you were coming out of triathlon?
My last triathlon race was 2019. Because COVID in 2020 sort of put a stop to it. And I actually trained in 2020 as if I was going to go back to triathlon. Like, that, And I still had ambitions of trying to make the team in Paris. And then, yeah, like something just changed in lockdown that, like, and I just sort of felt like, do you know what? Like, I need to step away from triathlon for a bit because mentally I just wasn't quite there and I wasn't receiving the support. And I was very much on my own up in the Northeast. I'd moved back up here just before COVID. And I decided I just need a bit of a change. So I started just running and I was self-coaching. And I thought when racing started happening again in 2021, I went down to Birmingham for the European 10,000 Cup, which is obviously back at Parliament Hill now. And I had raced and I'd raced in the B race and it wasn't pretty. It was a bit of a crappy race, if I'm honest. I'd gone out too hard in the first half and I just struggled in the second half. And I was just doing a bit of a cool down around the track. And I heard this guy shout, and I'm not going to swear on the podcast, but he said something like, you're not on such and such track runner. And I like looked behind and like had to like look twice. And I just sort of kept running. He went, you probably don't know who I am. And I was like, right, this guy's actually talking to me. So I went back to him and he was like, I'm Alan, nice to meet you. And I was like, oh, I know who you are now. And I think, you know, there's a bit of a thing in the Northeast. Like he's a big name in the Northeast, like especially because he coached people like Mike McLeod. And I'm actually good friends with Mike McLeod and his family and obviously his son Ryan and Mark. And he was obviously coaching them as well. So I knew who he was and he clearly knew who I was, like, albeit not very well. And he just started talking to me. He was like, I've just watched your race. And he says, yeah, you're definitely not a track runner. He says, and then, to be honest, nothing really happened after that. We were just joking on. He was asking where my dad was because he hadn't seen him for a long time since my dad was actually probably running and training when he was running in his group. And yeah, like I said, we just having a bit banter on. We watched the A race. Alan was coaching Emil at the time. So like he was very much like into watching that and really keen for Emil to do well, which he did that race. And then, yeah, like it sort of went quiet for a week. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna reach out to him. I'm just going to give him a call. And I'm going to just say it how it is and say, look, I'm self-coached. I could do with some guidance. You know, are you in a position to help? And yeah, that happened. And then he was very much like, yeah, like that's absolutely fine. Like I'd love to do that. And it just started as a bit of like, why don't you keep coaching yourself, but why don't you send me what you're doing so I can get a picture of like what you are doing, the sort of volume, the sort of intensity. And then I can start to input a little bit and we can sort of change things like really gradually, because I think the worst thing you could do would be to step in as a new coach and be like, right, new program, here you go, you know, go and do it. But it was very much the changes probably happened over the period of around like even more than 6 months, like probably up to a year before I fully transitioned onto like what he would probably say is his training and his coaching. But yeah, so that's kind of how it came about. I'd love to like go into detail on the full conversation we had, but it's probably a little bit explicit for the podcast.
That's amazing. I mean, how did that one-off comment make you feel then? Clearly it almost works, like reverse psychology, you know, him calling you not a track runner. You're like, geez, you know, cheeky guy, but you've ended up working together. So initially, were you just like, I bet you just didn't know what to make of it, did you?
Yeah, I was a bit like, almost like, I mean, I wasn't in the best frame of mind anyway, because never are after a crap race. But he actually put a smile on my face and it made me laugh. And I thought, you know what, like, this guy's definitely a bit of me, like, you know, not too serious. And yeah, I mean, he was right. Like, I know I'm not a track runner. I very much knew that anyway then. Like, I've seen enough videos of myself running to think, yeah, I do not look like a, I don't know, like a Steve O'Bell, like an Alex Yee or someone like that. And yeah, I sort of just took it as a bit of like, well, you know what, maybe you can help turn me into a not a track for them, but you can help, you know, turn that negative into a bit more of a positive. And that's sort of how it went. And yeah, like I said, it works really well, the relationship. And yeah, I feel like it's just still early days as well. And I feel like there's a lot more to come from myself, and I still think I'm learning. And, you know, Alan's not the type of guy to shy away from, like, you know, people who don't work hard. I think, like, that's the good thing. I think that's what earns the respect in the relationship, is that, like, I am a really hard worker, and I always have been. And I don't shy away from the fact that it's going to be hard, and he's very honest about that as well. You know, he'll be honest and say something's going to be hard, and that's absolutely fine. But yeah, I think there's definitely, I think it's just that, you know, I think he enjoyed coaching when he was coaching in the Northeast, you know, a long time ago in the 80s and 90s. And I think for him, it's probably a nice revisit to the past by coaching me, because I am very much a Northeast runner and a Northeast club runner. Just like, you know, your Brendan Fosters were, and your Mike McLeods and Steve Crams were back in the day. So yeah, it's nice to have that sort of going again.
Yeah, and I think you definitely have that reputation as well of someone who works hard. Like, I've never seen you train, for example, but that's how I'd always kind of refer to you if I was talking about you on the podcast, for example. But look, you're a working man as well. Like you mentioned, you're working full time. What are you doing for work?
I'm not going to bore you with what I do on a daily basis. But I work at Ernst & Young, and I work in US tax, specifically in private equity and real estate. It's quite a niche area of finance, and it's quite a demanding area of finance. As you can imagine, like, the US tax system is a lot more complex than the UK tax system. Yeah, there's long hours. We have busy periods. Now is a really busy period. So is the autumn. Late summer into early autumn. And yeah, you know what? I get a lot of enjoyment from working full time now. It definitely gives me balance in life, and puts a little bit of a different perspective on my athletics career. I'd love to work a little bit less. I'm trying to work on that now, especially when it comes to, you know, the marathon, because I think that's going to be necessary. But yeah, I'll not go into detail on what I do on a daily basis at work, because for most people, it's probably really bloody boring. But yeah, I do have a bit of a mathsy, financy brain, so it's quite nice.
But the bottom line is, you're a very busy man, and you know, you work, you're running in and around that. I was going to say, are you currently getting any sponsorship? Are you in talks with anyone?
No, I'm not. Badly. I'd love.
I think you like it that way, don't you?
You know what? It's nice in a way, because you know, I'm very much like, just, you know, this is what I do. I love running, and I'll do it regardless. You know, if I'm getting paid to do it, that's brilliant. If I'm not, then it's brilliant as well, because I just absolutely love running, and it's a massive part of my life. Sport is, in general. You know, it was the same when I was doing triathlon. But, you know, some support, you know, it would make life a lot easier, because I do spend an awful lot of money on running shoes. You know, I'd love to be able to take a bit of time off work and spend a bit of time at altitude and on training camps, because, you know, it does make a difference. And at the moment, my training camps are a week in Portugal when work's a little bit quiet. But yeah, like, some support would be lovely, whether that's a kit contract or whether it's, you know, more than that. I don't know. I don't know why it's never happened. You know, I'm probably not the best at self-promotion. I'm not the best at recording, you know, what I do on a daily basis. So it's partly my own fault, I guess, maybe. You could argue that. But, you know, I do like to stay under the radar, and I don't like to post what I do on social media, which is probably a bit of a downfall, really, because that's what, you know, that's what brands want a lot of the time. They want to see what you're doing, and Yeah, like I like to keep what I do quiet. I'm not trying to hide anything, but I just it's just probably just my personality to just sort of, yeah, just go under the radar a little bit, work hard, you know. There's nothing fancy about any of my training. Like, you know, I could record it, but it'd be a blurry camera and it would be me holding it probably. And I don't imagine anyone wants to stand in a muddy field in the middle of January. Like, I need to buy myself a drone or something like that, and then nobody has to do it. Like, someone can sit in the car.
I don't know, mate. I think keep being you. I think it's cool. To be honest, you do rock up to meets under the radar and stuff as well, and you always turn up in very good shape as well. So clearly, it's working for you.
No, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, one thing we obviously wanted to ask you about. Obviously, you mentioned you're doing Berlin Half. When is the marathon? When are you going to have another crack at that? Because you got a 2:13 PB, and you kind of mentioned the half and things. Like, when are you going to really kind of go all in and have another crack at that one?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and I haven't really thought too much about it as yet. It's definitely in the back of my mind as to there's definitely going to be a point where I do take a step back from work and I do commit a little bit more time and energy into running, and because I feel like that's what the marathon, you know, is going to require. And, you know, when I see people like Phil, you know, I know Phil pretty well from my time in Leeds. And I see, you know, Phil, it's amazing to see, because it's just a product of someone who just works damn hard, and someone who's consistent, someone who's smart with their training, and someone who knows how to pull it out on the when it matters. And I feel like, you know, we're sort of probably quite similar athletes and from that perspective, albeit like Phil physically is a lot quicker than I am, like, and his times are like only what I could dream of on the track and stuff. But from a mental perspective, I feel like, you know, it inspires me to see what Phil has done. It makes me believe that maybe, you know, there is a possibility, you know, with a bit more sort of time committed to that I could, you know, sort of get a bit more out of the marathon. Because yeah, the 2:13 was great, but it wasn't the perfect day. It was far from a perfect day, to be honest. I ran the full thing on my own. Albeit you would think in Seville, like, there's loads of people around you, but there just wasn't. And then I actually tore my hip flexor at 21 mile, and I'd stopped, and I thought, I did a bit of a Sifan Hassan, and I stretched it out, and I thought it was just a tight hip, a tight quad. And I sort of shuffled my way through the last 5 miles and dropped off the pace quite a lot. So to run 2:13 and given the circumstances, and you know, even Alan would say now, like, you ran that off not really much specific marathon training, because things just haven't gone well. When I did that, things just weren't, it just wasn't the perfect build-up. Well, I don't think there's such thing as a perfect build-up anyway, but you know, what in his eyes, what would be a good build-up, I think, would be a lot more than what I actually did. So I think, like, given I ran that in Seville, there's definitely room for more, for sure. But like I said, I do need to come back to it, because I couldn't do it now. I just physically and mentally just couldn't apply myself, because I just simply don't have the time with work. But I'd like to think in years to come, when I do take a step back from work at some point, and I can spend a bit more time on training camps and, you know, recovering, because that's the important thing in marathon running. I think, like, there's a lot more recovery required. I don't know when that's going to happen. I'm thinking more LA in 2028, like, as a long-term aim, and that's 4.5 years away. So yeah, whether it's next year that I decide to sort of take a back seat at work, or the year after, I don't know. Obviously, don't want to leave it too late, but I also need to think about, like, actually, like, being able to live and be able to afford living, and that's obviously why I do work, because I'm not paid to run, and, you know, I never have been. So yeah,
it's just the
standard might be 204 by LA 28.
Yeah. So, yeah, but then the shoes might be like triple carbon players.
This is true. This is a good point. Hopefully the tech's always ahead of the standards. Just wanted to finish up being Callum. Just a typical week under Alan's story, because I think that would be quite insightful.
Yeah, for sure. Pretty well, let's say, I mean, let's start off on a Monday, an easy double. Should I say every easy day is a double. So that'll be Monday, Wednesday, or easy doubles. Tuesday's a session, typically on the track, or in the winter can be on the roads, and I tend to go to Gateshead to the club for that. Mm. One, because I love being around the club, and I love being around sort of the grassroots and the amateur running scene, because I just get a lot of enjoyment from it. So I'd maybe do, let's say, I don't know, 10 by a K, 2:55, 3 minutes. You know, that might be a typical Tuesday. Wednesday, easy double. Thursday, in the winter, something a bit more longer, tempo-based. Yeah, anything from sort of 10, between 10 and 14, 15 mile. The pace, nothing too fast. There's never really a set pace. It's just relaxed, hard running. Then Fridays tend to be my easiest day of the week. Sometimes it's an easy double again, but sometimes just one run. And then every few weeks, that might be a rest completely. And then Saturday, sometimes, not every week, but we might double up that day. You know, everyone talks about the double threshold. Like it is part of my program. So that might be some threshold in the morning and a threshold in the evening, and that might total between 12 and 15 miles of threshold for the day, albeit it's split into two. Or if that's not a double threshold, because maybe I'm doing something on the Saturday, I don't know, I might be going surfing in the afternoon, or going out with some pals or whatever, then I'll just be straight with Alan and say, look, I don't think double threshold's going to work today, because I'll be knackered come the evening. So we'll change things around and we'll do something a bit higher volume. You know, that might be on the grass, and it might be 10 by a mile or something like that. But yeah, I do a lot of threshold running, a lot of aerobic running. And I think that's why, you know, cross country is always like favored me. That might not, you know, that obviously it's quite specific to cross country and half marathon, 10K half marathon, but that would obviously change throughout the year. But that's a typical sort of winter week. And then a Sunday, probably just an easy 90 minutes up to 2 hours. Sometimes, as I say, I'm not going into too much detail, but sometimes that might change depending on how easy or hard Saturday is. We might pick things up at the back end for the last half an hour. But yeah, just time on feet on a Sunday. Sometimes I get out with some of the lads from the club and just have a chat and then go for a full English after or whatever.
Love it.
The biggest
thing
I'm taking away from that is surfing in Gateshead.
Well, I don't live in Gateshead. I do run for Gateshead. But I live in Newcastle, but obviously, I don't know if many people know, but we actually have some incredible beaches up here in the northeast, like white sand beaches and some decent surf as well. The surf actually comes around the top of the country from the Atlantic, and we get some good swells. But I picked up surfing in lockdown, actually. And yeah, I've been doing it for four years now, and I absolutely love it. I love being in the water. I think I always have, even from being a kid. And it's like my release, my other hobby from daily life and from running. And yeah, it gives me something to do when I go on holiday abroad as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to hear. And what sort of mileage are you totaling for that sort of typical week?
That tends to be around the 100, somewhere between 90 and 100. It never really goes over 100. The only time I've went over 100 is when I've been marathon training. And that's when I've been abroad somewhere, like last year before Seville, I was in Portugal for a couple of weeks, just because of the recovery time and stuff. But Yeah, somewhere between 90 and 100 on average.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, look, Callum, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Great to chat to you, and obviously all the best for World XC in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. I appreciate you having me on, and it's been good to talk. Thanks.
Just before we finish, have you got any aims for World XC? I think we've covered a lot, but have you got like a position that you want to be inside, or is it just kind of like soak up that experience because it's going to be relentless?
I think, yeah, very much soak up that experience. Mm-hmm. Just appreciate the fact that, you know, I'll get the chance to wear another GB vest and, you know, compete at the highest level of distance running. You know, you look at the people that are going to be there and, you know, they're incredible athletes and they're performing at the top level of sport. Some of them probably likely to go on and win Olympic medals and titles this summer. So I think just, yeah, soak it up, enjoy being there, enjoy being with the team. In terms of my own ambitions and from a results perspective, I think, you know, being as high up as a European athlete as possible, really. And yeah, you obviously, like, us Brits are a team, but we'd be quite competitive amongst each other. And I think that would be good because I think we'll be all, I'd like to think we'd be all pretty close to each other. And but very much just soak up it, soak up the atmosphere, enjoy the experience, and yeah, just be grateful for just being there.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Well, all the best then.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks, bud.